Hello and welcome to Share Talk. I'm Charlie Gibson. Now, as we all know, the gold has been one of the rare bright spots in markets over the course of 2020. When we think about gold, of course, we think about the great producers of the past, and South Africa immediately leaps to mind. And if we think about the great producers within that, we think of the likes of Anglo-American, Goldfields, and of course, Rand Mines. Rand Mines, where it all started, in fact, arguably on the Central Rand in Johannesburg. Well, after the Central Rand and the Far East Rand, which is where most of the production came before the war, then South Africa opened up the really huge goldfields to the west and to the south in Klerksdorp, in Welkom, and probably the most substantial of all of these on the West Wits line, just to the west of Johannesburg. Great names like Driefontein, like Western Deep Levels, and the mine I want to talk about today, which is Blaafer Uitsicht. It's been shortened over the years to Blaafer, but that was Rand Mine's mine on the West Wits line. Several things result from that. One is that you have still a fantastic resource there. If you look at Metal Focus, they reckon one of the biggest underground resources in the world still to this day is at Blaafer. But also, after years and years and decades of mining, they also have absolutely enormous tailings dams. Tailings dams, which ever more in South Africa are ripe for retreatment to take the gold with the residual gold, which is in those heaps, which is in those dumps, can be reprocessed, and you can make a decent margin on. And that is happening more and more. Now, one of the companies that is doing that is Katoro Gold. Katoro's had a good run. It's listed in London. Its share price you could have bought for about a penny a piece at the start of the year. They're now going at about tuppence a piece. So 100% in the space of what? Five and a bit months. Joining me now on the line all the way from South Africa is their executive chairman, Louis Kutseya. Louis, a very good morning to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Good day, Charlie. Very nice to be speaking to you again.
Thank you. So let's talk about Blaafer tailings. And the reason, of course, I wanted to have this conversation is because a few days ago, about 10 days ago, you put out this announcement that you have, and I think it was 14 parties who were interested in financing this operation. Just tell us a little bit about the financing. Tell us a little bit about you, how you see the operation.
Well, yeah, of course. And when we first announced the transaction end of January this year, that's when we saw the very good reaction in the share price, and it attracted a lot of interest in the company and also in the project. And from that moment, we saw some very live and aggressive interest on the funding side of it as well, in terms of getting it into production and commissioning the plant, which we hope to bring into a point of producing around about 35,000 ounces per year when we reach ultimate full-scale production. Subsequent to that, we started doing some additional technical work. We've completed a scoping study, and we announced the results of the scoping study beginning of May. That created even more interest. We were already engaged in certain funding conversations at that time, but we had so much new interest, so much new expressions of interest in having a funding conversation with us, that we agreed with our joint venture partner to extend the period for the funding, or to secure the funding to put the project into production and to commission it further, and to create more opportunity, more time to go through all the funding approaches that we've seen. And that's when we announced that we had about 14 parties that we're talking to. That conversation is continuing. And I must say, for the past 2 weeks, I have been on the phone almost permanently in terms of discussions with regard to interested parties. Now, obviously, we are in the process of refining this, focusing it, getting to a point where we will narrow it down to a few preferred discussions or preferred entities. And that process is progressing very well at the moment.
So how do you see the process, as you say, progressing? What are the next timelines that investors are looking for?
Well, obviously, we're trying to finalize the funding as quickly as we can. But what I need to explain is that we have two parallel work streams here. The one is in terms of the continued development work that we're doing, which we've started in January already. The first deliverable on that was the scoping study, or the preliminary economic assessment. there's further development work that we will continue to do in terms of developing the whole project to a point where we are in a position where we can deliver technical work at the level of bankable feasibility, at least. That's the one stream. And in that,
what sort of timing?
At the moment, our timing in that regard is to have that finished before end of this year, the technical development work that we're doing. And then on the funding side, we hope to see that concluded within the next, at least to a point where we have final proposals on the table within the next month to 2 months. The thing that we have to keep in mind is there are certain physical realities that we have to deal with under COVID-19, which makes it more difficult to give on anything very definitive timelines at the moment. But what we've announced at the end of May is that we have extended the funding process or the funding period until end of June, and we hope to be in a position where we can have a more definitive position on the funding by end of June.
I mean, we realize that there are contingencies and you know, we will only know how the project actually looks or is going to look when you do the bankable study. But just take us back to the scoping study for the moment and tell us, you know, how much capital is required up front and what sort of output do you think we're going to get from Blayford tailings at what sort of grade and over what sort of mine life at what sort of cost, either total cash cost or AISC?
I will start off by saying I do not entirely agree with the fact that we will only know what the project looks like really when we have the bankable feasibility. And the reason why I'm saying that is when we embarked on the scoping study, we did that on the back of a lot of technical work that was done up to date. And we identified three objective areas for the scoping study. The first one was to understand the extent, the quality, and the quantity of the technical work that was done to date, and whether that is enough for us to advance immediately into a bankable feasibility. And this is a very important distinction to make. In the mining industry, when we do a pre-feasibility study, that's when you have a clear and proper understanding of what the project looks like. When we go into bankable feasibility, that's when we go into real detailed designs and detailed development. By that time, we know exactly what the economic and technical and operational potential of this project is. But the scoping study showed us we can move straight into definitive or bankable feasibility. What that means, we know today already what this project looks like, what it is, what it can give, and what the potential is. So that's an important distinction to make. Secondly, in parallel to this, it enabled us to get the funding process going, which we discussed just now. So it's really important to understand, and that's why I made the point, these are two parallel streams that are running at the moment. And the only reason why we could do that is because the scoping study produced a very clear picture on the technical work, development work done to date that allows us to go into the final technical stage, bankable feasibility. It clearly showed what the scope of work is that we need to do from where we are today to first production. And it also showed us that the timelines that we've initially anticipated of 18 to 24 months to first production is indeed achievable and can be realized. And thirdly, we unpacked it to its bare bones. We stripped it to understand exactly what the baseline is that we're working with in terms of operational, technical, and financial feasibility. And it stood up really well. It gave us a result. It gave us the results that we announced in the beginning of May. We see an IRR of 25%, an NPV 5 of around about $131 million, clear line of sight to production within maximum 24 months from now. Low all-in cost, which compares really well with other similar operations, not only in South Africa, but outside of South Africa as well. And it showed us that it also demonstrated that we have a really substantial area left in which we can continue to optimize and actually produce even better figures than what we have produced in the at the end of the scoping study.
These sort of dump retreatment operations and I think we know from looking at other operators on the Witwatersrand or in the Witwatersrand Basin. I'm thinking Pan African's Elikhulu. I'm thinking of Ergo as was. I'm thinking of DRD, Durban Ruderport Deep, which is now basically a dump retreatment operation. They would say mud pumpers, I think, but they're apt to moving huge volumes at very low costs. Metallurgical recovery is always an important part of that factor. So are synergies. Can I just talk about the synergies first? Are there any synergies with any neighboring or nearby operations that you could take advantage of, or is this purely standalone?
For the moment, it's standalone, but there are definitely potential a little bit further down the line for those synergies, as you put it. There are definitely opportunities, at least in theory then, if we want to put it that way, for synergies like that to be developed or to be exploited as we progress. As I say, for the moment, it's a standalone and it's perfectly capable to stand alone, but there's definitely potential for the development of, as you put it, synergies.
Do you have an idea just of the metallurgy of the dumps you're looking at this stage? What sort of, first of all, head grade you might be looking at and what sort of metallurgical recovery you think you can get from that head grade?
Well, quite a bit of work was done before we got involved into this project. And as part of the scoping study, as I've indicated already, a lot of attention was given to this specifically. What is a realistic expectation on recovery? We believe that a recovery of up to 60% is possible. What we have done in terms of the scoping study is to use a residual grade of 0.14 across the entire project and over the entire life of project, and which gave us an average recovery of 52.4%, which is a very conservative approach, which gives us a very strong position for where we can go into this project. So we are looking at between 50 and 60%. We believe 52.4% is definitely achievable over the life of plant, over the life of mine, if you want to put it that way, but with significant or definite, let me rather say, definite room to improve on that 52. So the 52.4% that we announced is our baseline recovery, which we think is definitely achievable. And on those figures, and may I just add, on a very conservative gold price modeled as a constant over the life of the project as well, at $1,500 per ounce, and it's also a conservative exchange rate, we still see the figures that I've mentioned to you just now in terms of IRR and NPV.
And in terms of workforce, that can be achieved what, with a workforce of 100 people or something?
Well, we haven't done that detailed modeling yet, but it's not going to be a big workforce at all. It will be a comparatively small in size. It's not labor intensive at all.
And one of the issues, and we were talking about the metallurgy before, but first of all, you don't always know, because whereas Mother Nature gives you reefs and gives you deposits which follow certain rules, you don't necessarily always know how tailings have been deposited in a dam. So sometimes you get a bit of a jumble of material and it doesn't have the continuity sometimes underground operations have. And I suppose at Blaefor historically they were mining multiple reefs. I know on the West Fitz line, there's Garben Leader, Ventersdorp Contact. Do you have an idea as to if that is something that you need to manage carefully, or, and you know, is there potential for volatility in, I suppose, grade and recovery? Or do you think you have a reasonable idea of what material lies where and therefore what treatment you need to give it and whether or not you need different treatments for the different sorts of material that may be mixed up in the same tailings dam?
When you are reclaiming a tailings dump, it's all a function of how well you've drilled it beforehand. So the benefit that you have in a tailings dump is that you can do far more accurate modeling based on the drilling density or the extent of the drilling that you've done. So it is something that needs to be managed, but it is something that can be managed. Your ability to understand and model a tailings dump based on the drilling that you do is far better than what you can drill or model an underground resource, just because the resource is already delineated. It's already defined. You know exactly what the extent and the boundaries are. So, definitely something that we need to manage, but something that is fairly easy to manage.
Okay. Well, we certainly wish you the best of luck with that. Developing on from this, I know that Blay 4 isn't your only project. You have several others, Imwero, Hennessy, Lubando. Just I'll allow you some latitude with, as I always say, your wildest dreams. But what would Katoro look like in a best case scenario? Do you think in what about a year and a half's time?
If it's up to a wish list, then certainly we would hope to see the tailings project in production, in full production at that time, and all things being equal.
As soon as 18 months, you can be in production.
Yes, that's what we've the timelines that we've announced before, between 18 and 24 months. We hope to see it in production. We always have to understand that any timelines that anybody gives at the moment is always going to be subject to unexpected influence or impact by the world that we live in at the moment under COVID-19. So. In the ideal world, we should be in a position, or we hope to be in a position, that we are in production at the tailings project, or at least then, at the very least, early production. And if we are able to continue the work programs that we have scheduled and planned for our Haneti project in Tanzania, we should also be there at a position where we have completed a first exploration drill program. If the results from that exploration drill program are positive, we should have commenced, dependent on funding, of course, or subject to funding, we should have commenced with a resource delineation program as well. But I need to stress that is all dependent on positive results from the first exploration drill program.
Yeah, all of those contingencies are, of course, understood. Just one final question, if I may, that I'd like to touch on. You mentioned, of course, the contingency around coronavirus, around COVID-19, that creates a certain degree, I suppose, of uncertainty that we wouldn't have had 7 or 8 months ago. But just tell us, how is South Africa's experience, and I'm speaking generally rather than your experience, but they had this quite stringent lockdown. Just to tell us how that has affected the country, how it's dealing with it, what the mood of the people is, what the attitude of the unions, not least MUM, AMCU. Just tell us how the sort of, the social progress of the country within that context is developing, and whether it's why and whether South Africa is a good destination for international investors.
The COVID-19 situation is no different in South Africa than what is anywhere else. It is it's a source of great concern from a health perspective for everybody, for the ordinary person in the street, for the government, and for business. But at the same time, there's a very strong resolve to get things back to as close as possible, as close as possible back to normal, and to do whatever is necessary to get the economy going as well, and to keep it and get it back at normal levels of functioning. And there's a great optimism that is achievable. There's a very strong the resolve of the people to create this and to keep on moving forward. In spite of the restrictions and in spite of the constraints that the virus brings along, is very strong. And I believe that, if anything, this will make South Africa an even more attractive investment destination going forward, just because of the economic realities that the COVID-19 situation brings along with it, and that the very strict lockdown has forced upon us, but for that matter, on the entire world.
Louis, we wish you the very best of luck. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Louis Kutsaya there, the executive chairman of Gotoro Gold, trading in London, talking ostensibly about his Blaefor tailings project in South Africa. Blaefor, short for Blaeforuitsicht, roughly translates into beautiful view or good outlook or something of that ilk. And I think you'll agree with me, a very beautiful view and a good outlook indeed. I might say, since I've played there, it also has, in my opinion, one of the best golf courses in South Africa. And if you are a golfer and you do find yourself there, then I would strongly suggest that you make your way over to the golf course there. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. This is me, Charlie Gibson, signing off for Share Talk. We'll be back in the very near future, I hope, with more such investment ideas. But until then, you have a very capital day.